League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You're locked into Transmission Roundhouse.
Hello and welcome to Queer Ear. I'm Rory Boyle and you're listening to the Transmission Roundhouse podcast that shines a light and sometimes throws a little shade on queer issues that don't get enough mainstream media attention. On each episode of Queer Ear, we spill the LGBT on a chosen theme or topic, leaving no stone unturned and no wig unsnatched. And on this episode, we're channeling our inner Tove Lo because we're talking body. Now, body image has been an issue that's plagued the community for decades, and thankfully we've seen a lot of recent coverage on this very important issue. At the beginning of this year, GQ ran an article by gay writer Nick Levine. The article explored the fact that these issues are still hugely prevalent in the community. Nick spoke to a gay fitness instructor who went on the record as saying that he believes the pressure many queer people feel to stay in shape has snowballed over the last decade. He said, "Looking good is not good enough anymore for some gay guys who value their aesthetics and appearances. They don't just want to look good, they want to look the best." Now, this problem has also been explored on the BBC series Queer Britain, Jamal T. Lewis's film No Fats, No Femmes, and in the Christopher Hines documentary The Adonis Factor. But even if you haven't looked at any of those recent examples, just open up any queer dating app and you're likely to see body-shaming phrases so familiar and cliched that even the straights know them too. Mask and in shape only, gym fit, I work out and you should too. These are just a small selection of some of the bile that plague those looking to meet someone online. To me, it feels slightly reminiscent of some of the language Asian men have been subjected to when browsing queer apps, which we explored on our Not Into Rice Queens episode. And this incessant need to achieve a quote-unquote good body or to conform to beauty standards is something I see on the daily when scrolling through the barrage of hashtag fitness goals posts on Instagram. So, as queer people, why do we have such a screwed up relationship with fitness and exercise? Despite a greater awareness of mental health and well-being, it really seems to be one of the hurdles our nearest and queerest have yet to jump. Looking back on my own experiences, one thing I distinctly remember is that I used to dread PE. In school, we swam every week, which might sound fun, but this was probably as far away from being in a tranquil infinity pool in Singapore as you can get. In fact, I remember someone taking a shit in the pool and then another student stepping in it. Yeah, that really happened. So the weekly Tuesday swim was awful, as was being in the changing rooms. But I do remember the sweet feeling of relief once it was all over, knowing that a new episode of Desperate Housewives aired every Tuesday night and I wouldn't have to think about hitting that pool for another full week. So, something that really caught my attention was a Metro article published in July of this year with the headline, "As a gay man, it's been hard to shake the scars of same-sex PE classes."
I think a lot of queer people share that experience in PE in school. And I hadn't really seen anything spoken about it before.
That's Jordan Page, who we'll hear more from in just a moment. Jordan is just one of three guests opening up about his complicated relationship with PE and his body image. Jordan told me that while his straight friends have been sympathetic and understanding of his story, they can't fully relate to it. And this has left me wondering if the queer experience of PE is at the root of a lot of our problems with exercise. Someone else who's shared similar sentiments is Ash Whipple, a trans student currently studying at the University of California, Santa Cruz. We'll hear more from Ash later in the episode, and we'll also be speaking to writer Rosie Hewitson about exercising as a queer woman. But first, let's go back to Jordan Page. His Metro article explains that his body image and fitness got really bad around the time he started secondary school. So I asked him to take me into that time in his life.
I just wasn't very happy at that stage of my life. I'd gained a lot of weight as well. Most of my friends really were girls. That's who I would surround myself with. They were the people that I sat with at lunch. They were the people that I spoke to in lessons. And then PE was like taking me out of my comfort zone completely. To be thrust with all other boys, all of them were straight to my knowledge at the time. And I hadn't disclosed my sexuality at that point. So I felt uncomfortable anyway, being around that many boys. And then PE was just the worst time for it because you'd be in the changing rooms and the teachers would be flickering in and out. They wouldn't be there the whole time to observe it. And even sometimes when they were there, they wouldn't say anything if they heard someone insulting me or bullying me. Playing sport as well, I didn't have the confidence because I was around people that bullied me. I was self-conscious. I couldn't concentrate because I was struggling so much. It got a lot better throughout school, and when I became more confident in myself and confident in my sexuality, I didn't let it bother me as much. But the first few years of secondary school were really tough.
Well, you brought up the teachers there, and I want to talk about them a little bit because I think perhaps there might have been some awkwardness surrounding your sexuality, which prevented the teachers from intervening. But equally, in my experience, a lot of the time they're homophobic themselves or they just don't care. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that there is a sense that they didn't really know what to say and they didn't want to say the wrong thing. But then at the same time, if you're seeing someone clearly being bullied in front of you, you as a teacher have a responsibility to intervene. Because I'm a boy and a lot of my PE teachers were men, quite alpha male, you know, like stereotypically loved sports, they wouldn't relate to me anyway because I was not interested in sports as much, or I wasn't of as much importance to them as the boys who were really good at sport in school. So I definitely think there's a combination of them not knowing what to say and then to a certain extent, them not really caring as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, absolutely no sympathy to the teachers that tormented us during the teen years whatsoever. But one thing you do speak positively about in the article is the fact that you got to occasionally play sport with your female friends and how motivating that was. And we all know motivation is important. Normani taught us that. So take me into what that was like.
It was so much better. I felt so much more comfortable. I wasn't afraid of trying. I think that was a big thing about being with the boys as well. I didn't want to try and then fail and then become even more embarrassed than I already was. So I think it definitely made me more motivated being around them. But I think in the grand scheme of things, because that wasn't that often, it wasn't really enough to change my opinion of exercise altogether. And I think the scars that same-sex PE lessons left on me did continue into my adult life. But when I was around the girls, it was 10 times better.
Before we talk about adult life and where you are now, I want to briefly speak about some of the statistics that were mentioned in this article. 19% of queer kids are bullied in changing rooms. 42% of queer students don't continue with sport at a university level because of their experiences in school. And you also mentioned that a lot of the time when you were the butt of someone's joke, it was the teacher delivering the punchline, which I found particularly hard to read. What are some of the key points you want people to take away from this article?
I think an awareness that it happens and that it still happens is key, because without awareness, people just carry on with their day-to-day lives. And I think a lot of the time as well, if something isn't affecting you directly, you don't really think that it exists. The statistics speak for themselves. It's changed a bit, but I've spoken to quite a few people who have said that they've had the same experience or they're having the same experience now in PE. One of my family members was actually in the supermarket and one of my old teachers approached them and just said that the article was really good and that it like changed their opinion. So I feel like just that one example makes me feel good knowing that I wrote the article and that hopefully it's going to change things.
Oh, I'm sure it will. And speaking of change, let's talk a bit about where you are now, because the article mentions that you were struggling with your weight, and I'm sure that has to play on your body image and your mental health. So tell me where you're at now with all of the above.
So when I got to the end of secondary school, my relationship with exercise was always the same. I just kind of avoided it like the plague. Like I would never partake in a group exercise. Like I would go to the gym sometimes, but I'd feel so self-conscious being there that I wouldn't maximize it to what I could. Choice is just so essential. I wasn't able to move anywhere because where could I go? I could either play football or I could play rugby. Because of the bullying and because of me being overweight when I was younger, I did get depressed, and I found that exercise was something that made me feel so much more confident, better in myself. So I think that it was kind of that realization for me, and kind of the realization that people aren't laughing at me if I'm exercising. People aren't going to make a comment at me if I'm exercising. I don't look stupid exercising. But I think obviously the bullying and the experiences that I had made me believe that for so long. So I think I did eventually break through, and now I really enjoy exercising. It's part of my daily routine. But I think those years did definitely leave an impact.
So despite his struggles, Jordan did eventually manage to embrace getting physical in the good old Olivia Newton-John, Dua Lipa kind of way. But he's clearly spelled out that a lot of his issues had to do with separation by gender. Now, this is something our next guest, Ash Whipple, understands all too well. Ash is an out and proud trans student at the University of California, Santa Cruz. But back in high school in Oakland, a lack of understanding and constant degrading comments from school staff meant that PE became an eternal struggle. Ash opened up about their experiences for Great School Voices, an online watchdog for equality in education. Ash's post, titled My PE Experience as a Trans Student, Swim Class, Changing Rooms, and Sometimes Ignorant Adults, highlights just how real the struggle was. Ash says that being transgender and trying to comfortably take a PE class is nearly impossible. So much of it revolves around gender, whether it be the changing rooms, the teams, or simply passing the class. Now, when Ash came out as trans, they did initially have some positive experiences. Feeling uncomfortable using both the girls' and boys' locker room, they were given a key to the coach's changing room, which was completely private, by an accommodating teacher. However, Ash was eventually switched to a different PE class with a coach who they describe as one of the most ignorant, unchecked, rude, and unlikable people they have ever met. A section of Ash's writing with the subheading, "When your teacher laughs and calls you it," is used to describe the coach's reaction to Ash's use of they/them pronouns. So why was Ash moved to this PE class in the first place? And how did this beyond disrespectful and transphobic incident take place in an environment where young people are meant to feel safe and supported at all times?
So the reason I got switched to his class for 2 weeks was because my original class was doing swimming and there was no real changing room solution. Plus, I was a really solid swimmer anyway, so they let me skip as long as I went with this other coach who's notorious for being bad with trans students. It was the end of class, the first class, and I was standing with some friends when he called me she. And so I corrected him. I was like, no, it's they, them. He laughed and was like, haha, so like it? And kept saying it and laughing, and all of my friends clearly didn't know what to do. And so I stormed off, went to the counselor's office because I was crying a whole lot. The counselor didn't care at all, but I had to go back the next day and the next day. And it happened, I think, once more in that 2-week period where I avoided him. But then at the end of the year, the two PE classes were merged to play games. And I remember we played Ultimate Frisbee, and the really transphobic coach was like, okay, to score a goal, a girl has to touch the Frisbee. Like, they made it this weird gender thing, and it's like, no, we're playing Frisbee. I remember being past the Frisbee, and everyone's like, oh, we can score now, and then just hurling it the completely wrong direction and yelling, I'm not a girl.
Well, you're a better person than I am, because I would have flung that Frisbee in the direction of that coach. But moving swiftly on, I want to talk a bit about how everything is gendered in the US, because that's one thing that you speak about in the article, how everything from your grades to the activities you participate in are decided upon based on your gender. And I can only imagine how difficult that must be for a trans person. So can you talk me through some of that?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of standardized tests, and depending on if you're a boy or a girl, the levels are different. I was actually with that homophobic PE coach. He was doing some of those standardized tests, actually, the 2 weeks I was with him. And I could blow everyone out of the water, except on the push-up test. I could barely pass the girls. But I always kind of got stopped. They're like, you have to stop, but we'll let the boys run to their full limit. And he just, again, laughed at me and said, oh, it must be nice for you to pick and choose.
So when I hear about this coach misgendering you, laughing in your face multiple times, making fun of you in front of your friends and classmates, I'm very aware of how vulnerable you are at that age and how damaging it can be. So tell me a bit more about why you think this coach was still allowed to be at your school around young people, because it's something you question a lot in the article. So have you come to any conclusion on any of that?
Well, I know that teacher was tenured, so he kind of was part of the institution itself. But also, I think administration, though they're more open to having the conversation and improving the lives of trans students at their school, I think that felt like a step too far at the time. When I went to the office, actually, to talk to one of my advisors about switching for PE, she was telling me, oh, I'm self-conscious too sometimes in front of other people. And it's like, no. It's not self-conscious, it's dysphoria, they're different things. So I don't think school administration necessarily always understands. They think they know what students need, but don't actually fully listen and try to understand.
Oh, definitely. I mean, one thing that you point out in the article very poignantly is that you are not an educator, they are the educators, and it's not your job to educate anyone on any of these issues. And equally, if you don't want to come out to somebody, especially if you don't feel safe in doing so, there's no reason that you should have to. So I'm wondering why you did make the decision to come out so publicly and be so vocal about some of the topics that we've been speaking about.
Yeah, it was kind of a decision of, is it worth the fight or me being uncomfortable for the whole year? But my logic for that was, if I can take the brunt of having to educate people, that means the students who come behind me won't have to. So that kind of pushed me to be more out there. And even if I was nervous and scared, I knew my parents were super supportive of me, my friends, like I had a strong support network outside of school. But also what made it easier was my parents always gave me the option of, if I needed a mental health day, I could skip school, no questions asked. But it was still hard to stand up in front of a class and say, no, these are my pronouns, and you will respect them.
Yeah, I think it takes absolute guts to stand up in front of your classmates and say those things, because in high school, all anyone wants to do is conform and not say anything outside of the box, which is probably why I hated it so much and why I would have abused the shit out of those mental health days your parents offered you. So I think it's amazing that you have had the strength to be so vocal. And one thing that you talk about towards the end of the article is wanting to be the change. So my final question to you is, what change have you seen in terms of greater respect for trans students since you left school?
I did receive a thank you email from one of my teachers. Someone he knew started using they, them pronouns, and he actually sent me a thank you note saying, I'm sorry it took me so long to figure it out and that I didn't fully take it seriously. I understand now and thank you for teaching me so I can be better for this other person and for students coming through. In college now, I'm actually scuba diving, spearfishing, freediving, sailing, being able to be super active and do something I love and being like, oh wait, gender doesn't play into this at all. The team dynamic is completely different and it's amazing.
So I think it's great that both Jordan and Ash have survived the teen years and managed to find what feels right for them in terms of exercise. But what about those of us who have reached adulthood and still struggle with the aftermath of the queer PE experience? Rosie Hewitson is a freelance writer who opened up about experiencing a quarter-life crisis and constantly feeling uncomfortable exercising as a queer woman. Here's what she had to say when we caught up.
Although I kind of enjoyed playing team sports, there was a lot of stuff around that I didn't enjoy. The PE changing rooms can be a real kind of hotbed of homophobia. I wasn't out at school. I didn't come out until just after university, really. So I wasn't being homophobically bullied myself. But this kind of teenage girl mentality of like sport being not very feminine, and I think the kind of fear that that instilled in me was what taught me that it wasn't okay.
Yeah, I mean, that has to have an effect on you. And one thing that you say in the article is, I've always felt a bit uncomfortable in conventional fitness spaces. And I suppose your queerness has to have played into some of that. There was a study that cited 63% of its participants saying that they believe sports teams' environments can be more homophobic than society in general. I mean, that's a pretty bold statement, but if that's somebody's truth, it really does speak volumes. And I don't know if elitism is the right word, but I think that all of these different types of gyms cropping up over the last 10 years that offer a glass of Prosecco after your fancy yoga class, the high ponytails, the Adidas and Stella McCartney tracksuits, that doesn't feel particularly welcoming either. So maybe tell me a bit more about how that affected your relationship with fitness as well.
It can be really intimidating, whether you're queer or whether you're just a newcomer. But I think particularly people that physically present in like a very conventional way that society in general believes to be like conventionally attractive. If you differ from that in your kind of gender presentation, that's another thing on top of maybe not being physically fit and comfortable in that sense that would put you off those kind of conventional gym spaces. And then, like you mentioned, I think a lot of gyms, particularly in cities, have this kind of brand that is quite elitist, financially so as well. So there's a number of different things, I think, that can put people off.
Well, Rosie, if anybody's gotten me through hard times, that person is Mariah Carey. And I know that she and Kylie's Greatest Hits played into your journey with finding your place within this world of fitness. So let's wrap things up by having you speak a little bit about that experience and how you have managed to find your niche.
One of the classes that I tried out on my experiment into trying to find a queer exercise space that I could feel comfortable going to was something called Drag Diva Fit. It felt like somewhere that you could be really unfit, that you kind of forget all of that as soon as you walk through the door. And the fact that there's like a drag queen, Mariah Carey, there to kind of send herself up and be silly and draw attention, I think means that you're less self-conscious because it's not like people are going to be looking at you when there's that to kind of entertain them. So the trainer who set it up, you wouldn't look at him and maybe assume that he was a personal trainer. There's an acknowledgement to begin with that you don't have to feel comfortable exercising. Not everyone does. for some people to even kind of turn up is incredibly difficult because of the shame involved in our relationships to our bodies. And I think particularly if you're trans, if you're non-binary, gender non-conforming, your body already probably doesn't quite match up to how you feel. And so wanting to look after yourself physically, there's a barrier to that, I suppose. Although it's inherent to kind of the industry, it is also completely unacknowledged, I think, by most of it. So that in itself is just refreshing.
Recording this episode has been really therapeutic for me because Jordan, Ash, and Rosie have made me reflect on not only my own experiences of PE and being separated by gender, but how it's affected me in my later life as well. I was lucky enough to go to a school where we did have mixed PE classes, but that didn't stop the teachers from often dividing us into constrictive groups based on gender. From being one of the slowest runners to the weakest swimmers in my class, and having about as much interest in football as the Daily Mail staff have in writing fair and balanced articles on Meghan Markle, the effects are plain to see in adulthood. But I think what's really inspiring and hopeful is that each of our guests have managed to find out what works for them in terms of fitness and health. As I said to Ryan K. Russell on our Coming Out as a Queer Black Man episode, I've always been more of a ginger spice than a sporty spice. However, slowly but surely, I've learnt to enjoy swimming again. It's crazy to think that it's taken me the best part of a decade to reconcile that part of my relationship with exercise. But it's a fact I can't skip over because it really shows just how traumatic PE can be for many students, queer or otherwise. But if I can learn to take control of my own journey with fitness and go from literally dreading swimming in school every Tuesday to actively choosing to swim every other day at my local gym, then I'm pretty sure you can find some form of exercise that has a positive effect on your physical health and mental well-being too. After all, Kylie said it best, it's never too late. That's nearly it from me. If you like what you heard on this episode, please do subscribe and leave a rating or review on Apple, or hit that follow button on Spotify or your favorite podcast streaming service. It puts a huge smile on my big old queer face seeing how much you enjoy the episodes we work so hard on making. All that's left to say is that I've been Rory Boyle, and thank you for getting it in gear, keeping it here, and listening to Queer Ear.
You're listening to Transmission Roundup.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.